This will continue the summary of hearsay exceptions, including the dying declaration and the declaration against interest exceptions. Both of these require the declarant to be unavailable. We will also look at the forfeiture by wrongdoing exception. And finally, we will look at the residual exception, as well as the due process limitations that apply in certain cases. First, let's turn to the dying declaration exception. This is one of the oldest hearsay exceptions. Under Rule 804, it applies in criminal prosecutions for homicide and also in civil actions. The rationale for this is the reliability and practical necessity. To qualify, the statement must be made under a belief of impending death, and it also must concern the cause or circumstances of what the declarant believed to be the impending death. The statement must also be based on the personal knowledge of the declarant. The California version of this provision is stricter in one respect, requiring the declarant to have actually been dying. It is also more liberal in another respect, because it applies in any type of case. One of our cases here was the Shepherd case, where the court said the exception did not apply because Mrs. Shepherd still had a hope of recovery. We also had another case where the witness said, "If anything happens to me, tell them the Greek had nothing to do with it." It turns out this was not admissible because no one was being prosecuted for homicide, and also the statement did not concern the declarant's impending death. There is a special rule in this area under the Confrontation Clause. This type of statement would be considered testimonial, but based on the history of the Confrontation Clause, the statement falls within a historical exception and will not be barred by the Confrontation Clause. This was noted in the Crawford case itself, and we also read the Lewis case confirming this. The next exception is the declaration against interest, again under the Federal Rules, Section 804. The rule requires that the declarant be unavailable. Secondly, the statement must be contrary to the declarant's proprietary, pecuniary, civil, or penal interest, or it could also be a statement making invalid a claim against a third party. California extends this further to declarations against a social interest. This includes a statement that would make you an object of ridicule, hatred, or social disgrace. It must also be a statement, generally, that a reasonable person would not make unless it were in fact true. Now, do not get this confused with the exception for party admissions. For that exception, any statement can be used against a party, whether it is against the party's interests or not. Also, it does not matter whether the party is unavailable. One example of a declaration against interest was the Roberto Duran case, where his cousin, Iglesias, offered an apology for stealing his World Boxing Championship belts. The declarant, Iglesias, was unavailable as they could not locate him and persuade him to return to the country. So the statement qualified as a declaration against his penal interest. That case was decided prior to Crawford's interpreting the Confrontation Clause. However, so we need to think about how the Confrontation Clause would apply. Where the criminal defendant has not had the opportunity to confront the defendant, as was the case in the Roberto Duran situation, probably these statements are going to be considered testimonial and would be excluded by the Confrontation Clause. There is one piece to the Declaration Against Interest Rule that will apply in a criminal case. That is, statements exculpating the accused and inculpating the declarant for criminal liability are not admissible unless they are corroborated. The reason for this is that these statements can be unreliable, and the rule is not designed or intended to admit unreliable statements. We considered this part of the rule in the Jackson case, which involved whether some statements from a guilty plea hearing of a co-conspirator could be admitted in the trial of a defendant in a separate case. The statement in question involved declarant's indication at his plea hearing that the defendant in the separate case was not working for the declarant in connection with a cocaine smuggling operation. The court said that this was not a declaration against interest because it was not self-inculpatory of the declarant. So the court never got to the requirement of corroboration. But the court also characterized such statements as inherently unreliable. The next exception that we studied was the forfeiture by wrongdoing exception. The general rule here was that a party forfeits the right to object to a statement on the grounds of hearsay when the party's own deliberate wrongdoing caused the unavailability of the witness. In the case of Giles versus California, the U.S. Supreme Court addressed this exception and said that, like the dying declaration, the forfeiture by wrongdoing exception was an historical exception to the Confrontation Clause. In Giles, the court also addresses whether the forfeiture by wrongdoing exception should apply in domestic abuse cases. The court remanded the matter for a determination of whether the defendant had intended to keep the declarant from testifying at the time he killed her. The dissent thought the exception should apply and cited domestic violence statistics. Note that there is no precise analog for this exception in California. Now, for our final issue under the hearsay rule, we will take a look at the residual exception. This exception is to be used sparingly, the court indicates, and there is a great debate about how it should apply to situations where evidence fails to qualify for another exception. In the Laster case that we studied, the document failed to qualify for the business records exception because the owner of the business had died. And the specific information required by the business records exception had not been determined. A final overriding constraint on all of the hearsay questions arises from the Due Process Clause and the Confrontation Clause, as illustrated by the Chambers versus Mississippi case. There, the court overturned the defendant's conviction where a witness's statements concerning his role in a murder had been held inadmissible for technical reasons under the hearsay exception. They did so because the overall result violated the defendant's right to due process of law. A subsequent case, however, Fortini versus Murphy, illustrates how narrowly this due process exception has been interpreted to apply. That will be the end of this summary of the hearsay rule and its exceptions.